Off the ball. This is News Talk.
So here we go. Padraig Carrington has been named Ryder Cup European Captain 2020. We're going to talk to Paul McGinley, as mentioned, who knows Harrington and the role itself pretty well. We're going to hear about, ultimately, it's just a very sad story. The rise and fall of Tommy Duke Morrison. You'll certainly know him as Tommy the Machine Gun in Rocky V. He did also beat George Foreman to win a World Heavyweight title, which is sometimes overlooked, and ultimately had to retire from the sport when he tested positive for HIV 3 years after winning the world title. And then a busy football show. Dan McDonald is here. We also will hear about that 5-6 year period where Manchester United went from European champions to relegation, all because it's 50 years this month since Matt Busby said he was retiring. So that is all on the way. 53106 is the text number. We are at Off the Ball on Twitter. As I mentioned, Dan McDonald in studio.
Hi, Joe.
Happy New Year, Dan.
And to you, Joe. Is it a happy one so far?
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
Oh, you're, okay. Your voice is off. You okay?
I've been a bit sort of...
Everybody has the sick.
The sick, yeah. I was sort of at a wedding on New Year's Eve, and like everyone was in the same sort of bracket, and maybe it's just like the excesses of the wedding that's just carried over now.
Move back a bit there.
No, I guess, no, I don't think I'm carrying anything at the moment. I think it's just more that sort of brokiness, you know?
Is everyone sick? They are. Richie, are you sick? Hello, Richie.
I've got a lingering thing as well, Joe. I'm not going to lie to you.
Right, okay.
You seem like the kind of person who's a bit germophobic and afraid that this might hurt you.
No, I'm fine.
Inching slowly.
I'm actually okay. I crashed before Christmas, but I'm okay now, actually.
He's got the telly coming up this weekend, so he's worried.
But it has to be done for that. Get the vitamin C into you.
All coming around. So, Padraig Carrington is your first story, Richie. No surprises. It's extraordinary stuff, really. So, this is the third time out of four that Irish Golf is producing the Ryder Cup captain for Europe. So, Harrington is up for Whistling Straits 2020.
He is indeed, and he says he'll take the lessons of his three terms as a vice-captain into his Ryder Cup captaincy at Whistling Straits next year. The three-time major winner confirmed today as Thomas Bjorn's successor as the European skipper. Harrington, as you mentioned, the third Irish Ryder Cup captain, and says his appointment is equally thrilling and daunting, while the Dubliner says his career reputation is on the line in Wisconsin next year.
It is daunting. Some of it's a little bit outside my control. I will concentrate on what I can control, but yeah, it does reflect on my career how this goes, and I'm aware that I could have passed up on this and just kept on going as a nice tournament golfer, but I am like everybody else who takes on the Ryder Cup. You are when you're a Ryder Cup captain, you're putting a lot of your the history of your game, your legacy, you're putting on the line. I don't think I ever thought I wasn't going to do it, but I wanted to make sure I was doing it for the right reasons. I wanted to be clear that I didn't just walk into this because it was the next thing to do in my career. I wanted to make sure that I was doing it because I believed in it and wanted it and felt I could add to it. So it probably was unlikely that I was ever going to skip it, but I had to be clear that I was doing it for the right reasons.
There you are, Padraig Carrington speaking in Wentworth this afternoon. He was pretty much the unanimous choice from a long way out.
Well, Westwood sort of, they've carved it up, basically. That's what they've done. Westwood has gone for Rome in 2022 and he stood aside, probably just to let Harrington take the bullet and go to the States, which is like, that is the tough one, right? That is sort of the one that's pretty difficult to win, and they're going to set up the course in a particular way.
Well, they give it names like Miracle at Medina when there isn't a way win.
Yeah, it takes a sort of effort, but I think it's going to be good. Mm. You know, Harrington's such a brilliant pundit. I mean, this is the thing, if people, you know, have tuned into his sort of golf coverage when he just, you know, he has this sort of, you know, easygoing, sort of chirpy outlook, and yet he's like unbelievably cutting.
Yeah.
And when he wants to be, you know, he sort of, was it Brant Snedeker or a couple of players? Charlie Hoffman, sorry, it was. Who he just sort of dissected with like
lacerated
one line.
Him, yeah.
And just reading some of the stuff after the Ryder Cup in September, some of the sort of pieces afterwards, it seemed like Harrington's role behind the scenes, that he was a great man for some of, I think it was Robert Carlson as well, but in terms of the stats and doing their homework and stuff like that. And you know, he has this unbelievably analytical mind anyway, that sort of rolls out the stuff that he actually will throw, as much as the Ryder Cup captaincy, it's a bit of a, you know, there's a lot of rubbish that goes with this job for a long period of time. But I think once the actual week itself comes around, watching Harrington, analysing Harrington, how he handles it, it's going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
For all that I said, the noise and all the sort of crap that goes with it, the actual 3 days itself will be great because he's in the middle of it.
No, for sure. And he's so forthright generally that I'm very interested to see how many interviews he does over these 2 years, you know? Because he can't help himself but be honest.
So yeah, often. He'll definitely, I don't think he'd go for the emotional wild card route, you know? I can just imagine him just
I can see
cutting
him
someone.
Really, like he cutting the legs off somebody purely because they were fit. What he sees as a winning team for Whistling Straits.
Because he's mates with Sergio now, right? They're yes, over everything.
They're good. He said today, I mean, he's had various captains and he mentioned the likes of Sam Torrance, who was very emotional, you know, and punched the heart and let's do it for Europe. And then there's the Bernhard Langer types who are more school teacher types. And he said, I'm more of a Langer. I'm not going to be a cuddly type. Childish, Richie.
I know, yeah.
I'd expect no more.
A Cork listener has already enjoyed that one there, Joe.
I'm a Bernhard Langer, he said more so. So he's going to be that type of captain, he reckons. And he was saying he's taking bits from various captains. I mean, we'll talk to Paul McGinley. It seems to me a huge amount of what you do in the 18 months before the actual event, is if you're the home captain, is you look at your team and you analyse them statistically to within an inch of their life and you design the golf course to suit them perfectly. Mm. But when you're the away captain, you have very little control over the golf course, as in none.
None.
So that is a huge amount of the work suddenly just beyond your control. Nothing I can do about it.
But you're just going to bring all the bombers to the States, right? Because they're just going to make it long and easy. That's basically what they'll do.
I would presume so. Whistling Straits is obviously more of a linksy type course. I mean, that said, when they had the recent major there, the USPGA, it seemed to suit a lot of the bombers.
Yeah.
But like Europe have plenty of bombers now as well, anyway.
I just picked them. Yeah, that's what you're going to do.
Most of them will be picked anyway.
Can he make Rory more European again in the next 18 months?
Well, Rory won't even play the European tour anymore.
This is the thing, yeah. You know? He's actually going to have to deal with that, though, really, as well, isn't he? It's, you know, Rory's commitment to the European tour. I didn't see the conference today, so I don't know if it came up.
He's already spoken about it to Sky, saying that. Mm. You know, Rory's commitment to the European cause and how much the Ryder Cup means to him is in the utmost, so he doesn't have any doubts or any worries about Rory playing in 2 years. It's going to be a form thing.
Rory likes the Ryder Cup. He just doesn't really like playing on the European Tour.
But did you see, I think it was Oliver Brown in the Telegraph over Christmas wrote a piece basically saying that Rory should be cut from the Ryder Cup. And I don't want to misquote that, but words to that effect that, right. You know, if he's going to be disrespecting the European Tour so much, but he's going to, every 2 years, grab the old blue and yellow flag and scream, Europe, 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 you know, maybe you know, someone now. I don't think Harrington's going to suddenly get on board with that stance.
No, I wouldn't think so.
You know, and Paul Casey and all the sort of opportunistic Ryder Cup players. You know?
So you're calling Rory McIlroy an opportunistic Ryder
Cup player? No, I actually like Rory. I think Rory's mistake is his honesty. Yeah. You know, like he just says what he thinks all the time. I mean, I think he should play the Irish Open, though. Part of me still thinks, you know, I really respect him and respect all his stances and nationality and all of that. I think, he gets a lot of grief because he doesn't fit other people's vision of what they want Irishness to be. You know, they want him to be the Irish that they want him to be. But I still think he should play the Irish Open, though.
I think that's
the one tournament that I just feel you've rebuilt it. I mean, he has basically saved the tournament in many respects.
It's your fault you have this dilemma.
But once you walk away and don't play it, then you kick it back down the road again.
You know, you have sympathy for everyone involved. Like Paul McGinley's going to be on at 7:30, so I presume McIlroy will come up in some respect, and we'll have to ask him how he feels about the prospect of an Irish Open at Lahinch that he, McGinley, is hosting without Rory McIlroy. Mm. I suspect he doesn't feel great. But then you listen to McIlroy and look, he was a bit cutting of the European Tour. He called it a stepping stone and effectively said everyone who's on it just wants to get off. However, he did say, I am at an age now where I do need to start making decisions for myself. And he said, I play my best golf at major championships when I just play the week before and take the week off before those 2 weeks, when I take it off, as opposed to playing 3 weeks on the bench or 4 weeks on the bench. So he's going to play the Scottish Open, which is the week before Portrush. That's how he likes to prepare for an Open. The Irish Open happens to be the week before the Scottish Open.
Which is, did he not get that date in the calendar, though, as part of his foundation work?
He did, he can't move a major.
I thought they, you know, of course, but yeah. I mean, the Irish Open was moved to that time slot off the back of their pressure, right? I thought that was deemed to be a good thing. I thought Rory wanted to be the week before next year because of Portrush, or this year, sorry, because of Portrush. That was his big thing.
And it suits him as well, I guess. Mm. So you can understand McIlroy turning around and saying, I need to do what's best for me here.
I understand his selfishness and I really like his honesty. Just gets him into problems every so often. Yeah. But I just still think like it just sticks a bit if he skips the Irish Open. But I don't know. I don't know if you watched him on Sunday in the last round of that tournament, but like he's just reaching around looking for a solution.
Oh,
you know, big time.
On the greens.
He just keeps getting to the edge and then...
We touched on it last night. He's hitting the ball beautifully, but he didn't make a single putt from outside 15 feet. All week.
No, it was pretty deflating watching it.
He shot a 72 on a day at that course where wind is the main defence with no wind. It was basically, the worst rounds all day were 73.
He just falls flat. But if he gets to the final round and it's like New Year's Eve, it's 12 o'clock and it's like, great. And then he just... It just goes.
Starting to become a habit.
Yeah, so it's becoming a bit of a thing.
Final round with Tiger, we mentioned last night. Final round with Molinari at the Tour Championship. He was in the final round with Justin Thomas last year as well. Obviously, final round on Sunday with Gary Woodland. And each time, not only has he not really competed, he's actually fallen away. He hasn't even finished second. So, it's not ideal.
Maybe he just looks out for himself. That's fine. But, you know, come to the hinge. Jesus.
Yeah. Look, it'll be terrible if he doesn't come. You can understand it. He has to look out for himself. But an Irish Open now without McIlroy will be... embarrassment is too strong
that just,
a word.
That just leaves us... He will get grief for that from predictable places.
Marion Glenty's three Irish Ryder Cup captains in quick succession, lads. Not bad for a country of 5 million odd people. How many are on the island now?
Maybe about 5.5.
Yeah, something like that,
Whistling Straits will suit Harrington and Europe. He'll make a great captain. He spoke nicely of Rory today too, says John in Mallow. So Paul McGinley will join us live at 7:30 or so. Padraig Harrington, as expected, European Ryder Cup captain for Whistling Straits in 2020.
Chelsea have issued a strong statement to their supporters ahead of tonight's EFL Cup semi-final first leg with Tottenham at Wembley. Elements of their support have come under scrutiny for anti-Semitic chants made in Europe and the suspension of four supporters over alleged racial abuse suffered by Raheem Sterling. 5,000 Chelsea fans will travel to Wembley tonight, with the club saying any form of abuse will not be tolerated, while Tottenham fans are also under scrutiny themselves for their own chants, which use ordinarily anti-Semitic terms. The teams are in for this one. For Spurs, Paulo Gazzaniga starts in goal, a back four of Kieran Trippier, Toby Alderweireld, Davinson Sanchez and Danny Rose. In midfield, Harry Winks and Moussa Sissoko, and in front of them, Christian Eriksen, Dele Alli and Heung-Min Son, and Harry Kane leads the line. For Chelsea, Kepa Arrizabalaga starts in goal, a back four of Cesar Azpilicueta, Andreas Christensen, Antonio Rudiger and Marcus Alonso. In midfield, it's Jorginho, N'Golo Kante and Ross Barkley, with Willian and Eden Hazard in the front three alongside man of the moment Callum Hudson-Odoi. Speaking of him, Bayern Munich are close to making Callum Hudson-Odoi their third most expensive signing of all time. The Bundesliga giants have made a fourth bid for the Chelsea youngster, believed to match the Blues' asking price of £35 million. The 18-year-old is believed to be open to the move, but Chelsea appear willing to let him go only if they can keep him until the end of the current season. Should the move go through at that price, only Corentin Tolisso and Javier Martinez will have cost Bayern more.
Any thoughts on this Callum Hudson-Odoi situation?
Well, I mean, I heard you speak last night to Kev, you know, who'd mentioned him a couple of times. I'm not going to pretend to have watched him loads and have, you know, opinions on him in that respect. But the trend itself is really just interesting, that like the Premier League giants now are such monsters in their own way that they're able to sort of let these teenage players go. You know, they almost let them go in the knowledge that I don't know if there's any suggestion of a buy-in, buy-back or anything like that here, but it's, you see with Jadon Sancho and these other sort of young, like, English-produced talent, that they can sort of afford to let them go. It's a good return on their investment, so they, you know, their academy or, you know, can be deemed to be paying its way.
Yeah.
But if you almost sense if they want them back someday, they can go down that road. It's like, you know, Madrid and Barcelona have let all these young players go. I mean, wasn't Fabregas initially was in a setup? You know, I don't know. I think it is interesting that there is a bit more wanderlust and people looking outside the, you know, rather than just going to Bournemouth or something like that, you're going to Bayern Munich, you know. And I don't know, sometimes you wonder, is it just a couple of people doing it, or is this division for the next 10, 15 years, the player's been encouraged to go outside their comfort zone a small bit and try something different. So I think it's pretty interesting.
Speaking of that, Brahim Diaz's move to Manchester City, from Manchester City to Real Madrid, has sparked further calls from Pep Guardiola for Premier League sides to field B teams in the lower leagues of English football. The Spanish midfielder was limited to just 15 City appearances before his 15 million euro move to the Santiago Bernabeu. Real's Castilla side play in Spain's Segunda B league, as do the likes of Atletico Madrid, Barcelona and Celta Vigo's. And Guardiola feels a similar setup in England would help young players.
Create a good second team and you will see how many young players will be in the Premier League. Play against real teams, against guys with 25, 24, 26, 27 years old. Sunday. Compete really every single weekend with the real games. Fighting to survive or relegated, create that. And after, maybe the managers in the Premier League will have more courage to put them. But they don't. They play every weekend friendly games.
So for example, tonight, the City under-21s are against Rochdale in the Checkatrade Trophy. Is that a good idea, then, more of that sort of style tournament?
No, make a league, you know. They have to show on the grass, you know, on the pitch. I say many times, on the pitch it speaks for itself, not my words or the words they suggest for the media or the agents or the families. It's on the pitch. That is the only way they put it on the pitch or not.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's really going to... I mean, is he talking about dropping them into League One effectively with other teams, you know, with established clubs? I mean, that is the model that exists in other countries. I don't think that's ever going to fly in the English culture, as much as it, because the lower leagues are so vibrant in their own way, and all of a sudden you throw a B team or a reserve team in there. Now, I'm not sure if he's saying specifically that, but, I mean, you know, you'd Padraig Amendon talking about Newport and his FA Cup win, and I saw him mention in one of the papers today, I think the Herald, he's doing a lot of stuff about, you know, Lincoln playing Newport over Christmas with 10,000 people at the game. I mean, that's unbelievable. You've got Sunderland in League One with 40,000 people at their games. I think if you suddenly have a Man City B or a Liverpool B or something thrown in there, you know, that's not... I don't think Pep's ever going to get his way with that. You know, maybe there's cup competitions and other ways that you can.
They've tested the waters.
They've spoken about it, didn't they?
Yeah. Side tonight playing.
And that is something. And it is true. Like, you know, these academies are producing so many players that they've nowhere to go as well at a certain point. And I can see his frustrations, but I just don't see it ever sitting into the English. The England are going to redraw their leagues to make room for those second sides. I can't see it happening.
Ian Keatley then looks to be on the move.
Yeah, he's set to join Benetton in Italy at the end of the current season. The 31-year-old has been with Munster since joining from Connacht in 2011, but has found himself tumbled down the out-half pecking order at Thomond Park following Joey Carberry's arrival. The Limerick Leader report that the deal to see Keatley join Benetton is done, and he'll provide cover at the start of next season, especially with Tomasso Allan and Ian McKinley, ex of Leinster, of course, heading for the World Cup with Italy. Speaking of out-halves, Jack Carty has signed a new two-year deal with Connacht. His new deal will keep him at the sports ground until the summer of 2021. He's been in fine form this season as Carty for his province, scoring 109 points in his 12 Pro 14 appearances. That is the second highest total in the competition. And his head coach, Andy Friend, is delighted to keep Carty with the province.
Yeah, I think he's been brilliant this year, mate. I think his confidence is right up there, and he's showing... you know, he's showing that he's got an immense skill set. His percentage goal kicking is, if not the highest, one of the highest in the league at the minute. You know, he's got a deft pass. You can give him a hole, he'll take that. And I actually thought on the weekend his tackle entry work was probably the best I've seen. So, you know, he's playing good rugby in both attack and defence, and it's for Connacht, for our future, it's a brilliant signing for us.
Keen Kelleher, meanwhile.
Yeah, he appears to be on the move as well. His move from Connacht to Leinster is a step closer to being made official. The 24-year-old winger spent the last three seasons at the sports ground, having graduated from Leinster's academy. But it's Leinster he's heading back to there now, and it's believed he's told his Connacht teammates that he will be returning eastwards when his contract expires in the summer.
Walkinstown Beckenbauer has been in touch. Padraig, spot on. This arm around the shoulder malarkey, give me a sergeant major any time, says Walkinstown Beckenbauer.
I'm getting more and more of a full picture about Walkinstown Beckenbauer and what a character he is.
Yeah. He should be invited to the 2019 Off the Ball Christmas party.
I won't go offer.
Raheny Mick says, the three Irish Ryder Cup captains has to be taken in context. It's a sport not played very much outside a few countries, same as rugby and cricket. Well, considering there were none before these three, it's still a big enough achievement.
It's a big enough thing, but I suppose...
You go past, I presume McIlroy will be given it despite his European situation at the moment, and Graham McDowell...
Will he have to fight for it?
He'll need a bit of luck. He'll need us to fall the right time. The fact that he's won a US Open and has a reasonable persona over in the States means he might actually get
American
one.
As well, so
he might get one in the States.
The
you know,
got a count in his favour too.
Thomas Bjorn, it suited Bjorn to do one on home soil. Graham McDowell might be just the type they see.
See, Molinari's going to get one at some stage because they have to. I mean, this yeah, thing. Yeah. I mean, in fairness to that point, I mean, it was Great Britain and Ireland for a long time because no one in continental Europe was.
Yes, true. But I was going
to
just say, when you go through McDowell, if he gets it, and McIlroy, we could then be waiting a very long time, by the looks of things, for the next Irish captain. Yeah. I suspect Shane Larry hasn't played in a team yet. He'll need to have a really strong couple of years and play in a few teams.
Larry would be a good vice captain, though. You can have
maybe he'll work his way up. And look, McGinley never won majors or whatever, but he was a Ryder Cup player. Like, Larry's getting on into his 30s now and still hasn't played Ryder Cup, but there's the possibility there.
Could
but
be a long time, yeah.
If Larry doesn't, which at this stage you would say he won't,
long
then
way to go.
Us and Raheny Mick could be waiting 10, 20 years.
We'll be looking
years.
Back to this golden era.
Totally.
This golden era of Irish captains.
No, it's an acknowledgement of a golden era for Irish golf. Champions Cup action then, there's various players been added to squads.
Yeah, Ulster, they've added Robert Balakoon to their Heineken Champions Cup squad ahead of Saturday's Pool 4 meeting with Racing at Kingspan Stadium. He replaces Henry Spaeth, whose short-term contract has expired at the province. Meanwhile, prop Kyle McCall's to see a surgeon after suffering what the province are calling a significant hamstring injury in last weekend's Pro 14 hammering at the hands of Leinster. It's a further blow to the province with young winger Angus Kernahan suffering a hamstring injury at the RDS, and he is out for a month.
Was Conor O'Brien added as well?
He was added to the Leinster squad too, yeah.
Okay.
Sam Crowe is rated as very, very, very doubtful, that's a direct quote, for this year's Cheltenham Festival. Last year's novice hurdle winner will be left among the entries for the champion hurdle, but Jingletown spokesperson Eddie O'Leary says they're looking at the bigger picture and longer term with Sam Crowe, who's lost in each of his last three outings, most recently placing fifth in the Ryanair hurdle at Leopardstown. And O'Leary says they won't be rushing the six-year-old back into action.
Are you feeling the Cheltenham excitement? It's
ramping up now. Yeah, it's one of the things that gets you through sort of January, gets me through the excitement, because the Dublin Racing Festival will be coming up to start next month, which is a new thing. It's brilliant, you know.
And how is 2019 shaping up?
It's shaping up very similar to, you know, recent years, in that, I mean,
Mullins Elliott.
But Sam Crowe was meant to be the next big thing. I mean, Sam Crowe was the rising star last year and has been the biggest disappointment this season, where basically they tried to make it into a champion hurdler when the logic was send it over fences and it'll be a Gold Cup horse one day. And the argument would be that maybe they've gone down the wrong route. But even in saying that, his run the last day was like too bad to be true. A lot of people who'd be racing fans would have watched this and wondered what the hell was going on. It basically got beaten by its own pacemaker in the race, you know, so that's never a good sign.
No.
So, but yeah, it will be a story of Irish success. It's just a matter of who gets to enjoy it, you know.
Okay. Rory Delap then.
Yeah, he's part of the coaching setup that have been placed in temporary charge of Stoke City following the sacking today of Gary Rowett. Stoke's 1-1 draw with Shrewsbury in the FA Cup third round has proved the final straw for Stoke's board, with Rowett managing just 9 wins in 29 games since being appointed in the summer. Kevin Russell and Andy Key joined Delap in taking charge of first team affairs. Meanwhile, it's believed former Fulham boss Slaviski Jokanović has turned down the chance of an interview with Stoke, as he claims he's not ready for a return to football just yet.
By the way, I mentioned we're doing that Tommy Robinson piece later on. Are you familiar with Tommy Robinson in any great way?
Tommy Robinson, you've thrown me there. No, go on.
Aside from his World Championship win and the being diagnosed in...
Tommy the Duke Morrison was in Rocky Five.
Morrison, yeah. He said,
did I say Robinson?
He said Tommy Robinson. Oh God, and I was right, like, okay. Jesus, I've seen his videos on Facebook, Joe.
No, we're not doing a piece on Tommy Robinson. What are we doing? We're doing a piece on Morrison. Sorry, Morrison.
The thought of him getting punched, though, is slightly more enjoyable.
I really wasn't, yeah. I wasn't as familiar with Morrison as I should have been, it turns out. I just, maybe this is idiocy on my part, but I didn't actually realise he had won a world title and beat George Foreman.
It was a really cluttered heavyweight scene at that stage. Yeah. Like really, really cluttered. There was a lot of the guys winning heavyweight titles and who were all pretty useful to some degree. But I think Morrison was viewed on the lesser end of the scale around that time.
Yeah, it seems to have been, but still got there. So he just narrowly missed out on the Seoul Olympics. He grew up very poor background, grew up Seoul Olympics in 88, and he just missed out against Mercer, who won gold ultimately. Mm. And then in 1989, he's 21 years old, Sylvester Stallone's brother spots him, and he knew that his brother was looking for somebody to be in Rocky Five and was struggling to find somebody, and he said, "Just look at this kid, he's young, he's good looking, you know, he takes all the boxes." And so Stallone saw him, said, "Yeah, you're Tommy the Machine Gun in Rocky Five," and he was, so suddenly he's a national star, starts getting all the big fights, and within 3 years he beats Foreman to win a WBO heavyweight title. That was 1993. And in 1996, he's standing up announcing to the world he's HIV positive and he has to retire.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing this.
I must say, did
you know this before this?
No. Ronan outside spotted it. He said the reason we're doing the piece, I know it could seem a bit random, is he would have been 50 this week.
Right, okay.
And he died in 2013. Mm. Obviously, things had developed into AIDS at that stage. But it seems quite, you know, so in we'll play the clip in 96. In the press conference, it seems like he is fully acknowledging he's HIV positive. But then somewhere over the next 10 years, he's reading various conspiracy theory websites and believes he doesn't have HIV anymore, tries to make a comeback, fights two fights. These should not have been sanctioned, these fights. Obviously, he couldn't fight after being diagnosed, given blood. In the ring, and he fights two fights and is convinced he doesn't have HIV. Ultimately, I think he acknowledges in the end he did when he died in 2013. Dies penniless. But just when he, you know, when he hit fame post Rocky and won the world title, it was non-stop drinking, partying, completely out of control, huge entourage. One of his friends, in there's a great 30 for 30 about him, so was convinced he had a sex addiction. Like, he was just completely out of control.
Yeah. As soon as you have an entourage, you know you're in trouble.
And an entourage of 20.
Any entourage, if it's three lads, you should be, because you're ultimately you're paying them to be around you, which is never a good scene.
The entourage tend not to hang around too long.
I can't remember his performance in Rocky Five.
Rocky Five is the worst of all Rocky.
No, I know the film's terrible.
I've seen Rocky Five.
It's, you're better off. It's terrible.
It is dreadful. But I don't think for a 21-year-old who had no acting experience, he shamed himself.
He comes across as a 21-year-old who had no acting experience. But ultimately, like you say, like anybody, I think he performed better than anybody probably would have done.
Yeah.
Cast into that kind of scene.
Yeah.
Dreadful movie.
No, dreadful. It's true. I mean, that really was the end of the Rocky franchise until
Rocky Balboa.
He just said, sod it, and bringing it back.
Which is a great movie.
So yes, Tommy the Duke Morrison.
Yeah. Morrison. I mean, you were just looking at me there, and I was thinking, what the hell is he talking about? I was just not expecting that joke.
Are you looking forward to the piece?
I'm looking forward to that piece. Yeah, not the piece that you would
build initially.
Push to be.
Yeah, so that's on the way after 8 o'clock. I just thought I should mention that because I didn't really give it any billing a few moments ago. So, last few stories.
Celtic confirming the signing this evening of Ivorian striker Vakhun Isufbayo. He signed a 4-year deal, having left Slovakian side Dunajska Streda after only 8 months there. But he made his Ivory Coast debut last month off the back of scoring 18 goals in the Slovakian Fortuna Liga this season. He's Brendan Rodgers' third signing of the January window, following the loan arrivals of both Oliver Burke and Timothy Weah. Megan Connolly and Harriet Scott, meanwhile, have been recalled to the Republic of Ireland women's squad for the upcoming international friendly with Belgium. Colin Bell's side opened their 2019 campaign against the Belgians in Spain on Sunday the 20th of this month. Under-17 players Rebecca Cook and Emily Kraft were also included after impressing during a November training camp. While the Football Association is looking into an alleged Nazi salute made by Crystal Palace goalkeeper Wayne Hennessy. The Wales international was pictured with his right
arm. You haven't seen the explanation.
The explanation is beautiful.
What is the explanation?
He had to do with it at the football show to some degree. We need the quote.
He basically says at that particular snapshot in time, he was found to be giving what appeared to be a Nazi salute, but he swears blind. Was not.
And how much does it appear to be a Nazi?
Very much so.
A lot of the responses to his
right arm, left arm.
Was this on the pitch?
No, at a dinner.
A party. A
lot of responses to his message were like stills of that shot in Father Ted, where, you know, Ted is behind the window with the and sort
black,
of
the perfectly square piece of black dirt.
Pretty much his excuse.
It's not dissimilar to that. The excuse.
What?
He's like, oh, well, it just looked like I was being a Nazi there.
He was raising his hand while holding to shout towards someone and was covering his mouth to, I don't know, make sure the sound travelled because it was a noisy room.
Right.
But not making a Nazi salute
and
to
it was
a German.
Posted on Instagram by his teammate Max Meyer, who's German.
Yeah.
Okay. So is it the sense that he was doing this to his German teammate, as if to say, you're German?
No, he just was raising his hand.
Okay.
He just but he called for another glass of Sprite.
He's allowed to deny it, in fairness. Is Martin O'Neill to Stoke back on then, wonders Paul in Cork?
I would seriously doubt it. Big Sam to Stoke, though.
Do we have any sense
of... David Moyes was the one that's been doing the rounds. I think he was mentioned in one of the papers the last 4 years.
Do we have any sense of Martin O'Neill's intentions? Does he want to keep working?
He spoke to Luke Edwards and George Calkin recently.
Very much wants to keep working. But
he definitely wants to get back in. He's got scores to settle. I mean, he's always had scores to settle. He's got more scores to settle now. So, he's not retiring. Okay. I'm curious as to where he'd pop up now.
Championship?
Well, he might have to go there, but I mean, is he that firefighter who goes in to like get a team up? He doesn't actually have a track record for promotions in that respect. Unlike, say, Steve Bruce, who's a sort of promotion king. So,
he's
done it, but he's not one of these like people who has that reputation. He hasn't worked in the second tier since he got to Leicester. He's never worked in the second tier.
He's
so, so that would just be a bit of a gamble for someone.
Okay.
But, you know, Nottingham Forest would have an emotional appeal, but they were looking for, you know, he doesn't seem to have been mentioned in the dispatches this time around.
Okay, that's the news round for this evening. All this week, we're giving away entries to Quest Adventure Races around Ireland with a grand prize on Friday of a weekend in Kenmare for two people. Quest Adventure Races involve running, cycling, kayaking across various distances in stunning locations. And the good news is there are routes to suit all levels and abilities. You can choose from a Quest race in Kenmare, Glendalough, Killarney or Loch Derg, all of which are great days out. To be in with a chance of winning, just identify our mystery voice who wants people to get dancing to keep fit this new year, but he isn't too fussed about whether it's the cha-cha or a bit of jiving.
I wouldn't mind a fella whatever bloody dance he does.
Text your name and answer to 53106 for 30 cents. Where did that clip come from?
I wouldn't mind a fella whatever bloody dance he does.
What was he talking about?
It doesn't matter.
Text your name and answer 53106 for 30 cents. We'll announce the winner later on in the show. It's all with thanks to Quest Adventure Races. Find out more at questadventureseries.com. We're talking to Paul McGinley about Padraig Harrington next.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.